From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. It's great to have you with us as we launch our 22nd year on the air here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And this is what we've all been waiting for. I shared this with you last week, but for those that missed it, this is a letter to the faithful on new protocols for worship and ministry from Bishop Jaime Soto. Dear friends in Christ, starting Friday, June 18, pastors may accommodate the faithful for the celebration of the sacrifice of the Mass, as well as other sacramental and worship services at 100%, I can't even believe I said that, at 100% of the seating capacity in the parish churches. What a beautiful day the Lord has made. I am rescinding the general dispensation from the obligation to attend Sunday Mass. Starting Sunday, June 20, at 2021, all the Catholic faithful in the Diocese of Sacramento are obliged to personally attend and actively participate in the Sunday celebration of the sacrifice of the Mass. That's from Canon 1247. Pastors and the faithful are counseled that individuals are not obligated to attend the Eucharist on Sunday or other obligatory solemnities if they are sick, have a vulnerable health condition, are caring for someone with a vulnerable health condition, or have other serious reasons. That's from Canon 1245, also from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, section 2181. The bishop goes on to say, all the faithful are reminded of the perennial obligation to keep holy the Lord's Day, observing Sunday with prayer, spiritual reflection, works of mercy, fellowship, and rest. I like the rest part, too. Yeah. But that's part of it. That's part of keeping holy the Lord's Day. Pastors and the faithful should continue to observe sensible public health precautions, practice frequent hand washing and use of hand sanitizer, refrain from handshaking and other forms of physical contact with others outside of one's household, continue to clean the pews at least twice on Sundays and other days when there are multiple services. Facial masks are still encouraged. Priests, deacons, and extraordinary ministers should continue to use facial masks for the distribution of Holy Communion. During the distribution of communion, priests, deacons, and extraordinary ministers should have sanitizer available for use when needed. Bishop goes on to say, for communion, the distribution of the cup is still suspended. The exchange of the sign of peace during Mass may resume. The faithful should refrain from gestures of physical touching with persons outside of one's household. A respectful bow or wave is encouraged. Congregational singing may resume. Musicians and choirs should observe sensible public health precautions. Pastors should use their discretion based on local circumstances. These are the words of Bishop Soto in telling us that by June the 18th, a Friday, or Sunday the 20th, back to Mass at 100% capacity, and let's hope we have 100% capacity. Pastor should use their discretion based on local circumstances regarding the use of facial masks by musicians, cantors, and choirs. Liturgical processions may resume, entrance procession, the gospel procession, the procession of the offertory gifts, and the recessional procession. It is recommended that the collection baskets be handled only by the ushers rather than passed from person to person. Holy water may be made available to the faithful in the traditional fonts at the entrance of the church. Live streaming the Sunday celebrations of the sacrifice of the Mass for the benefit of those who cannot attend in person due to illness or other circumstances noted above is encouraged. It has been such a blessing to so many people during the pandemic. All the faithful are encouraged to receive the COVID-19 vaccination when available. Consult with your doctor regarding any personal health concerns. You should know that most places now, the CDC has approved it for 12 and up. Most of the clinics now are walk-in, no appointment necessary. The Pfizer, you'll get a second shot 3 weeks later. The Moderna, you get a second shot 4 weeks later. The Johnson & Johnson, which seems to have fallen out of favor. Very few people are getting the Johnson & Johnson, but it's a single dose. This is Bishop Soto adding, other ministerial, catechetical, and social gatherings may resume while also observing sensible public health precautions as outlined above. Pastors should take additional precautions for the handling of food and the provision of materials to avoid the use of shared utensils. Avoiding self-serve options for food and drink is encouraged. The return to regular congregational gatherings will be welcomed by many. Mutual respect, charity, and patience should be cheerfully exercised so that all the members of the body of Christ are welcomed and encouraged by this blessed opportunity. Over the course of the long pandemic journey, we have learned the personal duty we have for one another's spiritual and physical health whenever we gather and even when we are apart. The risks of infection still threaten us. Our communion with the charity and mercy of Christ will help safeguard us and lead us on the path of holiness together. May the intercession of our Blessed Mother Mary and Saint Joseph, her most chaste spouse, bring an end to the pandemic and fill us with the joy and hope of the Lord Jesus. Respectfully, Bishop Jaime Soto, Bishop of the Diocese of Sacramento. Also, the bishop has announced that we are going to have a pilgrimage right here in the Diocese of Sacramento. I suggested to to the bishop, maybe we should get a Reuters bus and crank it up and do, you know, like a tour of the Holy Land kind of pilgrimage. This is a little bit different. It will be a self-tour, and you've got between now and December 7th to do it. It'll commence on June the 19th and end on December the 7th, because the year of St. Joseph began on December the 8th of 2020 and will conclude on December the 7th of 2021. So when we had the bishop on, he said that when he was in the Diocese of Orange, there was very little repetition of names in the diocese of the names of parishes. He believed there were three Our Lady of Guadalupe's, but that was about the most common. Here in the Diocese of Sacramento, we have a lot of Sacred Hearts, and we have 11 St. Joseph parishes, 11. They are in Yreka, in McLeod, in Redding, in Marysville, in Lincoln, Auburn, Sacramento, Clarksburg, Elk Grove, Vacaville, and Rio Vista. There are 11 of them. So, as Bishop Soto notes, the apostolic letter of Pope Francis, Patris Cordae, with the Father's heart, declared this year as the year of St. Joseph for the Universal Church. In response to the call of Pope Francis, we are offering the Journey with St. Joseph pilgrimage, commencing on June 19, 2021, and ending on December 7th, 2021. The pilgrimage sites will be those churches named for St. Joseph. And you can find this all on the diocesan website, scd.org. It'll give you the addresses of each parish. A little easier to find in a place like McLeod, which is a very, very small town in Siskiyou County. Beautiful little town, right in the shadow of Mount Shasta. And then on Walnut Avenue in Redding, a much bigger, the one in McLeod is on Columbaro Drive, and the beautiful parish in Clarksburg, right in the vineyards, if you will, and the beautiful parish at up in Marysville with a giant steeple. It's been renovated. Well, there's so many of them. They're all such beautiful parishes. St. Joseph in Vacaville, Yreka, Redding, Lincoln, Elk Grove. They're all beautiful, beautiful churches. Journeying with St. Joseph demands a true gift of self, because in him we never see discouragement, but rather obedience to and trust in God. St. Joseph is an exemplary figure for all of us to follow because he took heed of divine providence and guidance. A few guidelines and mechanics. A pilgrim's prayer booklet has been designed to prayerfully guide you through your pilgrimage, and you can download that on the diocesan website, the Journey with St. Joseph Pilgrim's Prayer Booklet. Pilgrims may sign a guest book as they enter the pilgrim church. Pilgrims should venerate the Blessed Sacrament and proceed to the statue or image of St. Joseph. And trust me, These parishes will all have a statue of St. Joseph. The last church to be visited will be the St. Joseph Church nearest your parish, or your own parish named after him. And since you've got 11 sets of parishioners who will be visiting their own parish as part of the pilgrimage. Among the guidelines, pilgrims must pray the act of consecration to St. Joseph at the image of St. Joseph, or some prescribed prayers for St. Joseph, especially the ones in the Pilgrim's Prayer Booklet. If possible, pilgrims are encouraged to attend the celebration of the Eucharist and or receive the Sacrament of Reconciliation in one of the pilgrim churches. Always follow diocesan prescribed protocols for COVID-19. Pilgrims are encouraged to bring something for the poor, including non-perishable groceries, food vouchers, Visa cards, etc., to one of the pilgrim churches. Special tips, the pilgrimage is about 6 months long. There's enough time to complete the journey, but expect that the number of pilgrims will be doubled as the period comes to a close. Yes, the pilgrim rush, just like the Christmas rush. Visiting pilgrim will be happening at the same time, since this pilgrimage ends on December the 7th. Visiting pilgrim churches will generally be available every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Please arrange the visit or call the parish office if you plan to visit the pilgrim church outside the Saturday schedule, attend Mass, or go to confession. Note that there might be a baptism, wedding, funeral, etc. happening while you visit the church. It is advised that pilgrims remain quiet and respect the ongoing event. Note that some churches ask that you call ahead at least 5 days in advance of your visit. It is important to contact the parish office to make an appointment, especially when you are with a group. Wear comfortable clothing. Always consider clothing that shows reverence for our Lord. Offer masses or make prayer intentions for the poor souls in purgatory, praying for a happy death or good health, etc. Offer an intention for the elderly, the ill, the dying, and those who are unable to leave the house for health reasons. Pray especially for your discomforts and challenges during these trying times of this pandemic. And finally, discover each virtue of St. Joseph in our lives and grow in our faith, a beloved Father, a tender and loving Father, an obedient Father, an accepting Father, a creatively courageous Father, a working Father, and a Father in the shadows. Again, those 11 pilgrim churches, Wairika, way at the tip of, it's right on Interstate 5, way at the tip of California, just before the Oregon border, beautiful town that welcomes people to California when they're coming down I-5. Also, McLeod, if you get to Mount Shasta City, you turn off and take the McLeod exit, and it's about 10 miles around Mount Shasta to get to McLeod. In Redding, also on I-5, Marysville, Lincoln, Auburn, right here in Sacramento, Clarksburg, down on the River Road in Yolo County, Elk Grove, Vacaville, and Rio Vista. Vacaville right there on Interstate 80 between Dixon and Fairfield, and Rio Vista down in the Delta, another beautiful town and another great place where we have a St. Joseph parish. So journey with St. Joseph from June the 19th through December the 7th. And we do this anyway as a family. When we go into a little town somewhere, or we get off the freeway to get gas or use a bathroom or get something to eat, and maybe you're on a road trip, and we always try to look up the Catholic Church. Usually it's open, sometimes it's not. Depends on when we were there, but we always try to find the Catholic Church. It's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And reminder, Camp Pendola will be holding a family camp in the month of July, where you can use all the resources of Camp Pendola. But there won't be formal camp, but all the resources will be there. Camp counselors and recreation leaders will be there. The kitchen will be open. They will provide meals to go where you can eat outside. You don't have to worry about bringing any meals into Camp Pendola. And you can bring your kids of whatever age, et cetera. So it will be a wonderful, wonderful thing. Also, they will be holding day camps throughout the throughout the Diocese of Sacramento during the summer in July. Four different day camps at four different sites. And you can go to pendola.org to learn all about it, or simply go online to scd.org and learn about where all the day camps will be. But it should be great fun, and a great way for our kids to participate. 9 to 3 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. Fun in the Sun, July 5th through 9th at Holy Family in Citrus Heights. Weird Science, July 12th to 16th at St. James in Davis. These are all for boys and girls. Christmas in July, July 19 to 23 at Sacred Heart in Anderson. And Survivor Week, July 26 to 30 at Holy Trinity in El Dorado Hills. And the day camps are, they're a new thing, and they have high hopes that they will have legs and that they will become a regular thing. Now, the Office of Priestly and Religious Vocations is pleased to announce the upcoming virtual Quo Vadis retreat for boys ages 13 to 17. The dates for the retreat are August 5th through the 8th. Just save the date, but it's a great way for boys to learn about vocations, not just vocations to the priesthood, but the married vocation, the single vocation, a variety of vocations, and to help them along the discernment process. You can call 916-733-0258 for more information, or contact Maricela Smith by email at msmith@scd.org. And that should be a really a great event, even though it will be virtual this year. And respect for COVID. And finally, you know, a few ordination anniversaries. There are many, many, many ordination anniversaries in the month of June here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Deacon Ray Helgeson, he's been a deacon since June the 1st of 1985. That is 36 years. Deacon Richard Copps, 1985. Deacon Larry Nickamp, 1985. Deacon Joe Simkowick, 1985. And Deacon James Chattagai, 1985. Deacon Pedro Manriquez, 1987. Deacon Jose Ramirez, 1987. And Deacon Jesus Rodriguez, 1987. And many, many more. Deacon James Healy, 1981, and Deacon Don Golly, 2008, and Deacon Bill Gawkey, 2008, Deacon Dennis Gorsuch, 2008. We'll continue throughout the month of June to give you all the priests and deacons that have been ordained here in the Diocese of Sacramento during the month of June. That's going to do it for us for today. We'll take a It will not do it for us for today. We will be taking a break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Ned DeLessie, Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference. Stay tuned.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at the thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Deacon Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and Family and Faith Formation, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Deacon Kevin, for that wonderful introduction, and thank you for all the great work you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento and in your parish at St. Lawrence. Well, we had a chance to sit down with Ned DeLessi, the Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference, on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the California Catholic Conference that represents all the bishops of the state of California, deals primarily with the California legislature. Here is that interview with Ned DeLessi. And this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are glad right now to welcome in Ned DeLessi, the Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference, which represents all the bishops of the state of California. Ned, good day to you.
Good day. Good to hear your voice again, Bob. Wonderful.
You too, Hello, Ned. Hope your air conditioner works.
Yeah.
Summer arrived early.
I tell you honestly, I'm sitting outside right at the moment.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, hopefully the sea breeze will blow on you. First off, we are celebrating, I don't know who's celebrating it, but we're commemorating it, the 50th anniversary of the California Catholic Conference.
That's correct. 2021 is the 50th anniversary.
Wow.
The California Catholic Conference, the bishops had a big celebration back in February.
Mm-hmm.
It was part of February. The conference was started in January 50 years ago, and they celebrated right at the beginning of February with a virtual celebration.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And it is that time, and it was a different world back then, but yet we still maintain the commitment that we have.
Indeed. In fact, I've been so impressed with the conference and Catholic Charities and Sacramento Food Bank and on and on and on, redoubling their efforts during the pandemic because the need was there.
Definitely. Yeah. It's one of those not often touted facts that the Catholic Church is the largest private provider of social services, education services and healthcare services in the state.
Yeah. Yeah, I every now and then you get into one of those discussions, we call it, with a friend or an acquaintance or just a stranger who knows you're involved in the Catholic Church and say, oh, they come up with something they don't like. And I say, okay, let's just imagine just in the state of California that the Catholic Church never had existed, never came about. Do you realize how many holes there'd be in that safety net?
That's right, and I was talking the institutional presence, and then
right.
You have the St. Vincent de Paul societies and the sodalities,
and right.
And all the different outreach groups that we have in different parishes, and those who show up to feed the hungry in parishes, those who take in Family Promise of the homeless people, and
the Life Center and all kinds of
correct, the Body of Christ is alive and well, and we're out there present. Trying to touch and heal and be present to and the people in need in the state.
Indeed. So how much do you know about 1971 when the conference was founded? Was this a new thing nationally? Was this prominent in some areas? What were we doing sort of prior to that in terms of legislation, et cetera?
We'll have to let the listeners know that Bob wasn't born back then.
That's right. I have to go to confession now.
Prior to 1971, the church was involved in public policy to a certain degree. The Archdiocese of L.A. Hired a lobbyist who was working up here. But the primary issues at that time were the Catholic schools. And that was probably, you know, the biggest institutional presence of the church that that they were working on at the time. Certainly a certain amount of Catholic charities, but the lobbyist was doing a lot of Catholic school work at that time, and and that eventually transformed into currently Bishop John Cummins, who at that time you know, was not a bishop,
right,
but was a Monsignor, and he was invited to be the first president of the California Catholic Conference and came to Sacramento. He also became an auxiliary bishop here briefly. He served here in Sacramento as the conference director and eventually became the Bishop of Oakland. And in the small world, he's the man who hired me. You know, and then after after that, he's you know, he worked as a Bishop of Oakland until he retired. And
right.
He was present at the virtual thing, which was so wonderful. He was replaced eventually by other priests, Monsignor Dickey from San Diego, and Father Bill Wood is a Jesuit from. The third one was may he rest in peace, Cardinal Archbishop Leveda.
Oh wow!
Leveda. He was he came here and was the conference director also, and then he was replaced by a Jesuit priest, Father Bill Wood, who was replaced by a diocesan priest from Fresno, Monsignor Peterson, who was he lived at Sacred Heart. Where did he live? He lived at Holy Spirit Parish here, in Sacramento, and then worked
Land
downtown.
Park, yeah.
And then I replaced him as the first lay executive director of the California Catholic Conference. And now replacing me will be Kathleen Domingo, is the first woman director of the California Catholic Conference starting July 1.
Wow. So are the other conferences around the country, were a lot of them started about the same time?
Correct. You know, definitely most of them. It was, you know, sort of a post-Vatican II kind of response by the church. You know, the church was invited to engage the world in a little bit different way, and the church was getting, you know, organized. Up until that time, there were provinces and that type of thing, but there weren't really conferences, a state conference. There were, you know, the Archdiocese of San Francisco was a province, and there were suffragan bishops that were under the Archbishop there, and the same thing in L.A., but then when the conference was formed, then it became, those provinces still exist, but they're now all the bishops of California work together as a California Catholic Conference. And so most of them, many of the conferences, I'd say probably most of them emerged during the 70s. California was one of the early ones to step in because of the needs that were here.
Has the mission changed in 50 years?
The mission, no. The mission, I think, is still to evangelize in the public order. And you know, to be part of the public debate that helps shape from a moral perspective and bring our experience that tries to help shape the understanding of the good society and respect for life and respect for the dignity of the human person and care for those who are poor. And we would like a society that honors all those things. And so we're present as, you know, as the voice of the church, the voice of Christ in the world here. And that has not changed. I think the focus of different things, as I mentioned, you know, back then, you know, the Catholic schools was a big issue prior to the forming of the conference, and continued to be and continues to be an issue along the way. But, you know, there's also the social justice agenda and the life agenda and the family agenda and the religious liberty agenda and environmental justice and restorative justice. And so the breadth of what is engaged has constantly expanded as society has.
Sure. You know, you go back to 1971, pre-Roe v. Wade, barely. And, of course, the death penalty was very much in the news back in those days, you know, even things being on the ballot. I remember, I do remember as a Catholic in the mid-60s when Governor Edmund G. Pat Brown got on a state helicopter, flew to Golden Gate Park, and participated in an annual rosary event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just I don't imagine that happening today. But it was it really impressed me. I also remember his his opposition to the death penalty and all the hand-wringing about the potential and ultimate execution of Carol Chessman and
right.
and how very much that was in the news at that time. And, of course, he defeated Richard Nixon in 62, elected in 58, defeated Nixon in 62, and then finally lost to Reagan in 66 when he was running, when Brown was running for a third term.
Yeah.
And then the rest is history. It's interesting because I remember Richard Nixon saying at a press conference after losing in 62, you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore. And a few years later, he's president of the United States.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we share some of the same history.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, things have changed. The mission remains the same. The scope has broadened deeply. The culture has shifted and changed. From those times, obviously, there was a vibrant immigrant community from Ireland and mm-hmm. and from Germany and the European countries in particular, right. always an Hispanic presence from the South, but not as vocal and not as dynamic as it is now.
Right.
And now the diversity has expanded. Filipino, Asian, you name it.
Yeah.
It's the culture has shifted from that. To be rather blunt, from what was a semi-supportive or at least interested larger culture in religious formation, mm-hmm. religious presence in the society, to one that is very secularized and very individualized and not supportive in many ways. And so it's unique circumstances, but again, the mission remains the same.
Yeah, I was reading the other day about, and I don't think this was the California case, but we see it every year at this time, some young high school girl, and they have to give your valedictory speech to the powers that be before they let you speak, and she was going to thank God of all people for her success in life, and she may have thrown Jesus Christ into the speech too, and of course it was banned, but she sought some legal help and it got turned around, and you thought, she could have thanked a baseball star, a rock star, she could have thanked Madonna, she could have thanked whoever, that would have been fine, but you can't yep. thank, or probably wouldn't have been allowed to thank her parish priest or her rabbi or, for guiding her along the way. And we still fight those battles.
We certainly do. We certainly do. And as I had mentioned earlier, the religious liberty has risen in stature as an issue that occupies some of our time and attention right now.
And certainly during those 50 years, we flip-flopped a lot between Republican and Democrat control, the state house, the legislature, moved back and forth a lot, and that movement appears to have just stopped.
Yes, certainly at this moment, the Democratic Party is in the driver's seat, shall we say, with a supermajority in both the Senate and the Assembly, and since Ronald Reagan, I don't think we've seen a Republican administration go back to Pete Davis. So,
mm-hmm.
And that means that all of the generally elected folks, superintendent of schools, and the lieutenant governor and the different elected state leadership is all Democrat also. So. It's certainly a unique and challenging world right now in which to have my own prejudice aside here, in which to have a quality debate about the actual
true.
Substance and
true.
Focus of it. So that's a unique challenge for us as church right now.
Yeah, we see very little debate. We see a lot of I think both parties are guilty of this of putting the party first and whatever the party wants, that's what we want, and we don't see a legitimate debate. Just going back over even the last 60 years back into Edmund G. Pat Brown, it occurs to me that in almost half of those 60 years we had a governor named either Brown or Gray.
I won't contest that with you, it's just the moment that God has put before us, and
yep.
as the faithful disciples, we have to engage it, and we have to prepare ourselves, and we have to shift and change some of our arguments, and you know, and we're trying to stay on top of doing that. And, you know, we're currently fighting about abortion and assisted suicide, as we always do, yeah. About school choice, about options for quality education for those in the public sector. We're now discussing, you know, mental health and how can we support and assist people with mental health. We're looking at homelessness, you know, there's so many different issues that are out there, and currently we're totally engaged, as we probably were not as much back then. We're engaged in the conversation about the state budget. Where the state spends its money reflects its priorities, and we try and make sure there's a priority for those who are poor and a priority that seeks the common good. And, you know, while we don't get into, you know, tax laws and things like that, we do want to comment about how the budget reflects our values as a society.
Yeah, and we've discussed this before. There's just no neat pigeonhole for the Catholic Church in terms of political issues. So many groups that appear before the legislature, you know, you can pretty much put them on one side of the debate or the other, and not so the Catholic Church. I remember when you used to have the, what was the event called in April when you'd bring people up? Catholic Advocacy Day, where you would have four or five or six or seven or eight bills you were following and things that you were doing a lot of public outreach about, and some were sponsored by Republicans and some were sponsored by Democrats.
That's correct. And, you know, it is one of the gifts of the church, the charism of the church, is that when you're involved in moral commentary and you're involved in the experience of delivering services around, you're going to have a little more, I like to view it as a little more comprehensive understanding of, of the issues and an ability to relate to people on both sides of the aisle. You cannot, as you say, put our vision of the human person and the common good into a party platform. And that's a challenge for each of us as disciples, you know, because we do live in this, and the challenge is certainly to, you know, follow through and to do where, you know, the Spirit's leading you, but also to remember that, you know, God's in charge and yeah. not the Democratic or the Republican person that you like.
Yeah, now, if somebody said to me the other day, you know, you long for, the whatever era you liked the best, things were simpler or easier or something there, and somebody said, yeah, but God picked you to be here now, you know, so... You know, so be here now.
This is the moment in time, and you know, we're struggling in a society that, you know, and one of my pet peeves, of course, is the fact that, you know, we know, and everybody knows, and science has validated that abortion takes a human life.
Absolutely.
You know, and yet in our individualized and choice-driven society, you know, we don't want to even discuss what would be responsible curtailing of the practice. You know, and it's very frustrating, very frustrating. And, you know, from a Catholic perspective, you have to find new ways to raise that argument, to bring it to the fore and to remind people that this is what's happening. Same thing, you know, in the bill right now to expand the sad current reality of assisted suicide in California.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all of the, you know, we have a position, obviously, not supporting the notion of assisted suicide, but we have to argue this bill, which... You know, you try and find ways to help people understand that, you know, when you pass this bill, you promised you'd review it in 10 years, and now you're saying we don't need to wait 10 years. But you present no evidence as to why we don't need to wait 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now you say all the safeguards that the proponents, you know, said were so necessary to protect people are now obstacles to people's individual choice. It's like, you know, that's the debate that we're having as a society. And so, you know, we're engaged in that. And you know, I pick those two, but... I could pick four or five other issues also.
You know, but that one is particularly troubling, and it's one that I don't quite understand where the impetus for it comes. Who's pushing this?
The political push is from Compassion and Choices, the
right.
Society that are ideologically committed to a person being able to control every aspect of their life, even to the moment of being able to take their life. If they don't want to live in this particular reality, there's a subcurrent of euthanasia in there, and you know that there are people whose lives are not worth living, and you should be able to make that choice that your life's not worth living, and, you know, possibly society should make the choice that some other people's life isn't worth living. And, you know, it's certainly they've tied into the larger culture of choice, mm-hmm. and marketed it that way. But, and again, I'm no objective commentator on this, but, the choice is usually executed by people who mm-hmm. are well off, well educated, well insured, and living in that world of choice. Yeah, but, you know, the people who will be victims of this are the people who are on Medi-Cal,
right,
where it's cheaper to ask someone to kill themselves than it is to provide quality hospice care or quality palliative care.
Sure.
You know, and so there's a whole health equity argument that we're so much more well aware of right now in the pandemic, that certain portions of our society, African American and Hispanic in particular, suffer incredible health care disparities. And yet we're saying assisted suicide is something we should be discussing. You know, it's like, really?
Yeah,
really? In the midst of a pandemic, not enough people have died? So we don't have any mental illness problems. We don't have any suicide problems that have emerged in the midst of this. And yet, let's have a conversation about how we can make it easier for people to take their own life.
Yeah,
so, don't get me started.
Well, you are being objective though, Ned, and you're seeing the truth, and that's when you're speaking the truth, and that's being objective, you know.
And trying to, I can, you know, get on my particular tangent here, and I believe firmly in it, but you know, we have to find ways to engage other people in this conversation, and that's the beauty of an organization like the California Catholic Conference. That our job is to engage policymakers and their staff in these kind of conversations, to find ways to get attention, to find ways to engage the dialogue and say, you know, like, can we talk? Can we search for the truth? Can we search for the common good? Can we search for something that respects the dignity of the human person? So those are the challenging moments that we find in as the California Catholic Conference of the Political Order, but we each find them as disciples in this culture.
Yeah, you know, you use that term common good, and it seems if you go all the way back to 1789 when this republic started, there was sort of an assumption that you might have political parties and you might have disagreements, but that everybody was honorable and would work for the common good, even though they may have different ways or different opinions about getting there. I've become a bit distressed in recent years that maybe that's not always the case with some of our people that represent us in wherever, you know. And
that's true.
You know,
that is true.
More so than before, where we just have we seem to have gridlock in a lot of places, or full steam ahead in those areas where one party or the other controls things.
Yes, we could, you know, take that into many different directions. I guess I would leave it as the fact that the American experience and its beauty has always been one that values the freedom and individual liberty,
right,
and the individual. But we've always been able to recognize that individual flourishes when there's a society that supports and achieves the common goals,
right,
and things that help us all.
Right.
And, but now we find ourselves more on the side of I would say, worshiping the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that individual wants to do, that must be the common good, and it's not. And then you play that down the political realm, and you find yourself, you know, with, 70 million people vote this way and 70 million people vote that way.
Right, right.
Do we have a shared understanding of what's good for the society and what's good for the, can we discuss it? Can we debate it? That's the challenge right at the moment.
Yeah, it's
when you're in California in a one-party rule situation like this, that conversation is invited less and less.
Yeah, yeah. Has your access and relationship over the last 50 years, the conference, changed with the legislature? Is it easier? Is it harder? Is it, do you get more in-depth with them or less in-depth with them? Has it changed?
Yes, it's more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
It's more challenging of what I mentioned, the larger cultural shift that's taken place, where there's not as much value placed in the society and in the legislature itself on a religious voice or a religious commentary, not as much value placed on that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, you know, to be brutally frank, that, you know, the church's experience with sexual abuse
mm-hmm.
has not helped.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and so, you know, people say, well, gee, do we really need to talk to you? You know,
mm-hmm.
What's the downside of talking to you? And are we, you know, looking like we're, you know,
right.
in the current reality, we're looking like we're on the wrong side of this issue, on the wrong side of this, you know, this fence. And so that has diminished the church's voice, the church's access, the church's, you know, influence, if mm-hmm. you will. And we have to accept that, but then start building and looking and working together.
Indeed. So, in addition to assisted suicide, what specifically is the conference looking at now?
Well, that one's dominated so much of our sure. time and attention.
Sure.
I would say, you know, budgetarily, we're looking right now at early childhood education
mm-hmm.
and, you know, making sure that as we expand that to the benefit of children and children go back into their educational settings, that we keep the diversity that has existed, the public-private partnership,
mm-hmm.
that we not have a one-size-fits-all public, you know, approach to that. And for daycare, you know, and caring for children prior to that time, that we expand the funding and the availability of that, again, respecting the choice and the diversity of parents. And so we've been pushing that quite heavily right now. We've been working quite heavily on expansion of mental health, particularly for children,
mm-hmm.
because the children have experienced increase in suicides. And so we're hoping and pushing for the fact that the money that the governor set aside would follow the child. You know, let's not put it into public health or put it into public schools. Let's have the child and the parents of the child be able to determine where they can get that best access,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
whether it be a private school or whether it be a private provider of health, of mental health services. So we're pushing on that and supporting the notion of expanding access to mental health, but doing it in a way that really addresses the needs of the child in particular. So we've been pushing that pretty heavily. We've got some other issues that we're working on in terms of, you know, public-private partnership around homelessness. We'd like to see more contracting at the in the county level with our private providers like Catholic Charities. You know, we have like Mercy Charities Housing. They provide housing and that kind of thing, and the counties are committed to this. But one of the things that most people think is important in dealing with homelessness is being able to have case management, to be able to work with a person,
mm-hmm.
to help them deal with the challenges that have them on the street. And we do that, and we're present to them. We like to see a little more expansion around that particular arena. Wasn't too that fun through a big list in my head here. You know, we want more visiting opportunities in prisons for families and
right.
more supportive elements for faith and family in the prisons to help people with their readjustment back into the society. We're closing down the juvenile justice system in California in some ways, and the incarceration portion of it, and we want to make sure all of those children don't end up in adult prisons. And so we're trying to work to see some local solutions that would deal with children in a very, very different way. What else do we have going? Supporting a couple environmental bills, but I won't get into those too much. They've had to do with plastics recycling.
Have we seen data, Ned, on, you know, when a few years ago when we started putting the nonviolent people into county jails, you know, to serve out terms of longer than a year. Have we seen data on, was this beneficial? Is this good?
You know, I will not venture a guess because mm-hmm. I haven't been following that closely, Bob. Mm-hmm. So, we could certainly follow that up with a program with some folks who do work that issue. And,
yep.
and that would be a fascinating conversation, all the transformations that are taking place within the criminal justice system in the last 5 to 10 years, and what has that demonstrated and shown? I think we could get someone to come in and share some of that with you.
That'd be excellent. What about your school choice? Where are we on that?
I think at this moment there's some proponents who are looking to do a school choice initiative that they want to title the the Education Freedom Act. We're studying that and looking at it and deciding whether or not it's something that the Catholic bishops would endorse or support. It's a challenging reality in California with the control of the unions of the education, public education system. And so, but we're looking at that. I emphasize that the main place that we're looking right now is in the early childhood education. There was also a bill that just got set aside actually yesterday, but there was a bill to put in compulsory kindergarten. And, you know, we were studying that bill and looking at it for some time. And we like the idea of having children go to kindergarten. We like that, and we support it in public and private sector. But we wanted the parents to be the choice.
Uh-huh.
Not, you know, compulsory, but parents get the choice if they don't want to be compulsed.
Right.
And so, but that debate will move to the next year at this particular moment. But we're trying to keep the choice alive at the early part of the educational experience, because I think that's when parents are needed to be involved. We're studying and looking at, there's a bill that's moving through that has what's called this ethnic studies curriculum, and that's somewhat controversial. And we're looking at the role of parents in that and how that can play out in the local school districts. Very challenging conversation. Sadly, the bill that would have required all the school districts to publish online their sex ed curriculum did not pass. It stalled in the legislature. And so
that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is mind-boggling.
It just is. I as a parent, I mean, would they say, well, we're not going to publish the history curriculum either, or the math curriculum or whatever. If it's just another subject, why not let us see it?
Right. And you know, as we testified that, you know, this is part of the parent, you know, the parent-public partnership
sure.
to educate children. And parents, you know, certainly they need to know, so they can assess whether it's the right thing for their child, but
sure.
even more importantly, so that they can put it in the appropriate context,
exactly.
in the appropriate moral context that they can support and enhance and put it, you know, in the way that it should be put in into the child's life. And so, you know, we were strongly pushing for that the school districts be required to put it up there, and then it failed. And, you know, the only opposition was, the Planned Parenthood, now they were all in the trans community, you know, the LGBTQ caucus. And in our conversations with them, we're trying to say, so if we're embarrassed about putting the curriculum up there, that's a different discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a different discussion. You know, I mean, one would hope that this would not be an embarrassing curriculum, you know,
right.
regardless of where you feel on those particular
exactly.
issues.
Exactly.
You know, one would think that it would be a responsible and respectful
mm-hmm.
curriculum that would be put forward. And so, I don't know, it's going to come back again next year. We're going to push it and push it and push it because, 90% of our children are in the public schools. We want that public education to be a quality education, and we want it to be a reflection of the in loco parentis, that the publics are doing
mm-hmm.
this in the place of the parents and in cooperation and with the parents. So let's make it happen.
So are there any initiatives out there? I know the conference doesn't get as involved in the initiative, certainly. Once in a while, the bishops will say, we urge you to vote against such and such proposition. Or are there anything out there floating? I see something dealing with sports gambling has made apparently qualified for the ballot. But I haven't seen much else.
The next big election is 2022 in
right.
November. And so the legislature has time to decide if they want to put different things on the ballot, and I would expect there would be some. I mentioned that there's a group trying to put in a school choice initiative on
right.
the ballot, and there's a number of others that are working. The effort around that will be a September to March effort to get the signatures and have it certified for a 2022 election, and so we'll hear more about that as the summer unfolds and we get into September. Those that have the backing and the financing and the ideas shaped will start moving forward. I would say there's a debate going on right now as to when the quote unquote recall election will be held.
Mm-hmm.
Most people speculated it would be November of this year, 2021,
mm-hmm.
and now there's talk that it may be in September.
Mm-hmm.
So people are buzzing about that around the Capitol at the moment.
Interesting. Interesting times. So, and yeah. Ned, just in a minute or two we have left, tell us a little bit about your successor.
Kathleen Domingo. We'll make sure that she comes on to have a chat with you and the listeners.
That'd be wonderful.
Wonderful, wonderful woman. Native of Auburn, California.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of coming home, if you will, in some ways.
Yeah.
Worked at the Sacramento Life Center and worked in the Archdiocese of San Francisco, and the last 8 years or so has worked at the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, who's been sort of a counterpart in public policy and in our larger, life and justice programming, and the executive director of that department down there. So she comes very knowledgeable of the church, very knowledgeable of the political world, and a wonderful leader and good administrator. So I think
wonderful.
And a good presence, very good presence.
And she will come aboard on the 1st of July?
Yes, she will be in this chair on the 1st of July, and I will move into retirement again.
Very good. Don't go far.
I plan to try and go quite a few places to see the grandchildren. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, yeah. God's blessings to you and your family and everybody there at the conference, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon.
Likewise, and thank you for your continued interest in this and your ongoing engagement with the life of the church and the world. Just absolutely magnificent, and thank you to all the listeners.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ned. Yeah, that's Ned DeLessie, the executive director of the California Catholic Conference. He came back on an interim basis when a vacancy occurred, and then now a new executive director, and Ned will go back into retirement, well-deserved retirement, and Kathleen Domingo will be taking over on the 1st of July. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour. Right after this.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love and God is just.